The opening words today are from Song of Myself by Walt Whitman. This is the meal equally set. This is the meat for natural hunger. I will not have a single person slighted or left away. The kept woman, sponger, thief, are hereby invited. The heavy-lipped slave is invited. The venerelee is invited. There shall be no difference between them and the next. Do you guess I have some intricate purpose? Well, I have, for the fourth month showers have, and the mica on the side of a rock has. Do you take it? I would astonish. Does the daylight astonish? Does the early red start twittering through the woods? Do I astonish more than they? This hour, I tell things in confidence. I might not tell everybody, but I will tell you.
From a story that may be familiar to you, by Marjorie Williams, about what it means to accept yourself. After the reading, I invite you into a shared silence. What is real? Asked the Velveteen Rabbit one day, when they were lying side by side near the nursery fender, before Nana came to tidy the room. Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle? Real isn't how you're made, said the Skin Horse. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. Does it hurt? Asked the rabbit. Sometimes, said the Skin Horse, for he was always truthful. When you are real, you don't mind being hurt. Does it happen all at once, like being wound up, he said, or bit by bit? It doesn't happen all at once, said the Skin Horse. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily, or have sharp edges, or who have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, and your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand. The boy's uncle made me real, he said. And once you are real, you can't become unreal again. It lasts for always.
In 2006, our committee, our diversity committee, asked for stories from our congregation. These were stories about community, about relationships, about family, stories that had never been told, some, and all stories that needed to be heard. And we received many beautiful words, and those words were turned into a play for Voices that was presented in the 2006 Pride Service here at the church. And this year we asked for your stories again. New stories and new perspectives were woven into the original piece. This was done by myself and with the able assistance of Amy Anderson of the youth group. So these are your words. These are your experiences, and I ask you to take them in, understanding that the stories are independent of the voices speaking them. They're your stories. So I now invite you to listen to Is Acceptance Enough?
Distinct,
unique,
mysterious,
unknowable, separate,
individual,
inexplicable,
exceptional,
rare,
dramatic,
inimitable,
original,
separate,
incomparable,
individual, unknowable,
distinct.
Exceptional. Yes.
Yes.
We are woven together.
With our stories.
Our stories make us.
We tell our stories.
And when we are heard,
we tie threads of connection.
These are your stories.
Your words.
Your truth.
Beautiful, terrible truth.
And love.
Always love.
Love in all its beautiful, terrible, different forms.
Can you accept that?
When my son was 16 years old, I had injured my back, couldn't walk, and was in a lot of pain. I was crawling along the upstairs hallway when he appeared at his bedroom door and said, "There is something I have to tell you." I flopped over on my back, looked up at him, and gave him my full attention. "I'm gay," he said.
Gay?
What does that mean?
I'll never be a grandparent.
He picked that time to tell me because I couldn't run away from him, or couldn't run after him if he wanted to run away from me.
I have to admit, my next step was to arrange an appointment for him with a psychiatrist. After a couple of appointments, the psychiatrist reassured me that there was nothing wrong with my son. He was right, but it took me almost 20 years to feel comfortable in telling people that my son is gay.
I accept you.
Translation?
I don't like it, but I'll put up with it.
I sometimes resort to saying difficult things in writing when I'm having a hard time saying them out loud. My parents opened their mail one day to find a card from me written in crayons saying,
"I'm happy, I'm healthy,
I'm queer."
We never talked about it.
I had the strange experience of being surprised by the news that her son was gay, while at the same time realizing that at some level I wasn't really surprised. As a mother, my biggest regret is that for whatever reason, I'd been blind to the clues I'd been given over many years, and I realized with sadness that I hadn't really seen our son with the clarity and sensitivity that I now know would have helped him enormously.
When I asked him how it was that he never felt able to tell us over the years about his confusion, pain, and ongoing harassment at school, this was his reply.
"How could I do that, Mom, when I hadn't yet been able to look in the mirror and tell myself?"
"I accept you."
Translation?
"I'll just ignore the things about you I don't like."
My daughter had some difficult teenage years, as feisty youngsters often do. I honestly don't remember much about the conversation when she finally told me that she was gay. I don't think I felt any shock or denial. I remember thinking she was so young, about 14, and yet appeared to be very sure and self-accepting, even proud about it. I didn't doubt her because she didn't doubt herself.
It's a phase.
Did you always feel like this?
But you always dated boys.
One evening, some of her gay friends, all very young, were sitting around my table, and one asked me what was my first thought when she told me. I do remember very clearly. And it was that...
"Well, at least you won't get pregnant."
"I accept you."
Translation? "You are beautiful to me, no matter what."
At first, I thought he was the uncle, but I guess they're a couple. Whatever. They're really normal. Their kitchen is always messy.
I explained it to my children like this. "Some people like vanilla, some like chocolate, but it's all just ice cream."
I didn't know who she was, although I saw her at school all the time picking up the kids and stuff.
"Are you a lesbian with her?"
"Is your kid embarrassed?"
"I don't know. I've never asked."
"My friend lives with his two dads. He's so lucky. Always someone to play soccer with."
"It's not easy to step outside my door and be me."
"Oh, yes. We have new friends. Well, we know them from our kids' school. They're lesbians."
"All the kids in my class have lots of parents. Stepmoms, stepdads, partners, exes. It's weird when you see stuff about one mom and one dad, like on TV. I don't know many families like that."
My neighbors, Stan and Ted, helped raise my children. Somewhere among Stan's things is a photograph of himself and Matthew, my son at age 6. Stan is sitting in an old nylon-webbed, aluminum-framed, tippy 1960s lawn chair. He is holding Matthew's hands high above their heads as Matthew is climbing up Stan's legs, aiming for his tummy. They're laughing.
The other night, I was dressing up, as usual. I just figured out this new way to put on facial hair that looks fantastic and about 20 times more realistic than what I had going before. Usually, my friends and I have drag parties in large, swaggering groups, fondly dubbed the Old Man's Club. We paint on mustaches and smoke cigars and play poker and generally get up to no good. But this particular night, I was by myself. And due to lack of friends and cigars, I was walking around my neighborhood, feeling slightly amused and foolish. I was somewhere around Gonzales Beach when my parents drove by on their way home. I hopped in, and I was surprised to notice that the car reeked of alcohol.
Your father is inebriated.
My mother informed me, unimpressed.
I was bar hopping with your grandfather,
said my dad.
We even went to prison.
My family had been trying for years to get me to tell them I'm gay, and so are always quick to mention anything that could relate. The gay bar really is one of the last places I expect to run into my parents, or grandparents for that matter, I said.
Well, good. Now you know how bad it is. Isn't it sad that the only gay bar in town is pretty much just a hole in the ground?
It's not that sad. It just proves gays are just like everyone else. They go to lousy bars, too.
I could have said a lot more on that subject, but we got out of the car, and my mother noticed the hair on my face.
Men,
she said, resigned. What else can you do when your straight husband goes out to gay bars and your queer daughter stays home and glues a beard to her face?
My friend says her mom is completely unaccepting of her homosexuality.
It is hard for her to protect her sense of self from her mother's shame, not to mention her own.
In a wedding planning session, a marrying woman says to me, "Oh no, we couldn't do the wedding kiss. That would be asking too much of our family and friends."
They have been together for 19 years.
The soccer mom was the last straw. "So, what does your husband do?" I had only referred to my partner as she about a dozen times. "But what do you say? You know they don't mean to be obtuse, and if you keep correcting them, they'll get really embarrassed. So, what does your husband do?"
In the worst case, the family of the deceased had the locks changed on the home during the funeral, and the surviving partner was left with only the clothes he was wearing. A will had been drawn up by the seemingly supportive lawyer brother of the deceased, but it was lost.
What about changes?
What defines you?
She is a wonderful lesbian writer.
Let me recommend my gay dentist.
He's a gay farmer.
Ooh, what about?
My son's teacher is blue-eyed.
We know a short realtor.
The new corner store is run by a left-hander.
Do we need labels?
Change is a part of life.
My stepdaughter had lived with her boyfriend for 12 years. She then married and lived with him for 4 months. In the meantime, she met her future life partner. She took the brave step of divorcing her husband to take up a new partnership.
We, as family, totally embrace their togetherness and their love for each other. Our grandchildren, their nieces, are fond of both of them. They are enriching our lives.
It was a shock, in one sense. We'd been married for 10 years. But in another way, it seemed completely natural. My ex and her partner have created a loving, supportive home. And my ex is happier than I have ever seen her. How can you argue with that?
This is a work in progress.
My friend goes out for a romantic dinner with his partner and says, "We cannot live that simple eye contact, that gentle touch."
My life, in terms of safety and equality, is not the same as yours.
I love doing gay and lesbian wedding ceremonies. The atmosphere is charged with anticipation and awe. When we get to the pronouncement, by the authority invested in me, by the province of British Columbia, I now pronounce you a married couple. The joy breaks through, and the sense of achievement is tangible. I feel so fortunate to be a part of their happiness.
My children are far apart, both in physical body and in spirit.
I am becoming more comfortable that they will find their way to each other.
Shame.
Fear of societal rejection.
And of what might happen next.
We never talked about it.
10 years ago, we finally sat down together and talked. The burden of silence is broken.
I attended a workshop where people were asked what they loved about their families. People stood and talked about warmth and children and the joys of family life. One woman described her family, her partners and their companions, and their love for all their children.
The workshop leader confronted this woman and said,
I don't think your definition fits into the definition of family.
Suddenly, one of the normally quiet youth spoke up.
He spoke up.
He gripped the table, and with his chin quivering, he said emotionally,
It's not about that. I grew up in a poly family. It was a loving place. My mom and dad and my dad's male partner were my loving family. And you are all saying things that really hurt, full of assumptions about my parents.
We are the people that you are talking about.
I try to daringly tell the truth when I am afraid. And by telling, I become less afraid. I learned that the truth was something we all had access to.
We knew each other more by listening each other into speech.
There is an abundance of love. Just because one shares love with a person doesn't mean that the supply of total love available for someone else is diminished.
We were discussing the relationships of our grown children and realized that the relationship we were happiest about was the queer one.
What I wouldn't give if my mother would accept my life wholly, fully.
When my girlfriend can express her feelings without denial or resistance, she is committing a radical act of freedom.
Trusting the heart comes with a price. We have to decide at each twist of the journey if we're willing to pay the price.
There is some place to meet each other at the center of each of our truths, which is holy.
There is a warmth among us, which cuts across lines of socioeconomic status and ethnicity, unlike any I have experienced before.
I insist on living out loud.
That is why I am risking telling my story to you today.
You may judge me.
You may fear me.
Or you may be quietly cheering me on.
The key is to look within.
Within your heart.
Within yourself.
And see where your responses come from.
Are we simply making room for difference intellectually?
Except
a matter of principle.
Acceptance really meaning tolerance.
Change.
Transition.
Difference.
Is messy.
Disorganized.
It requires us to be fully present.
Listening to others.
Wherever they're coming from.
As though their world could be home to me.
Not just listening, but embracing.
Opening your heart, not just your mind.
Their stories could be my story.
Loving kindness lets us in.
Break the bond of silence.
Tell your story.
Closing words are from Whitman's I Sing the Body Electric. I have perceived that to be with those I like is enough. To stop in company with the rest at evening is enough. To be surrounded by beautiful, curious, breathing, laughing flesh is enough. To pass among them or touch anyone or rest my arm ever so lightly round his or her neck for a moment, what is this then? I do not ask any more delight. I swim in it as in a sea. There is something in staying close to men and women and looking on them and in the contact and odor of them that pleases the soul well. All things please the soul, but these please the soul well.